Hey folks, this is Frank from the Nonproductive Network, wishing all of you a happy birthday 2020. That's not what anybody says. A happy new year from everyone here at Nonpro. Yeah, that's it. In this new year, we need your help to make our network better than ever, just by answering a few questions. Go to non-productive.com/survey and tell us a little bit about what you want from our shows. And you can enter for a chance to win a fabulous thank you prize and, of course, get the opportunity to sound off about everything you think about our station. Once again, that's non-productive.com/survey, and thanks for all your support.
Okay, campers, rise and shine, and don't forget your booties, because it's cold out there today.
It's cold out there every day. What is this, Miami Beach?
Not hardly. And you know, you can expect hazardous travel later day with that, you know, that blizzard thing.
Oh, that blizzard thing. Oh, well, here's a report. The National Weather Service is calling for a big blizzard thing.
Yes, they are. But you know, there's another reason why today is especially exciting.
Especially cold.
Especially cold, okay. But the big question on everybody's lips.
On their chap lips, right.
Do you think Phil is going to come out and see his shadow?
Punxsutawney Phil.
That's right, woodchuckers. It's Groundhog Day! Yeah, that was a thing of beauty.
My God, man. That's, one take we did
yeah,
that.
Yeah.
Holy hell.
I'm impressed with us.
If the agents don't come a-calling after that, I don't know.
That's right. If, you know, if Punxsutawney, if you're looking for a new morning DJ crew...
That was our resume right there.
That was our little homage, our little tribute to the wacky morning DJs that you hear in today's movie, Groundhog Day.
That's right. The classic Groundhog's Day film came out February 12th, 1993, directed by the late, great Harold Ramis, written by Harold Ramis and Danny Rubin. Budget 14 mil, grossed 70 mil. This was a huge, huge, big old bag of hit.
That's cool. And I mean, its reputation has only grown in the years since.
Yeah, like people love this movie like quite a bit. I mean, just because like the concept is really, it's really different. I don't think anything has really come out since. Well, not since, but like, because there had been like a ton of movies that came out with the same kind of concept where somebody repeats the same day over and over again. But yeah. it was like that Edge of Tomorrow, that Tom Cruise film.
There was a horror film called Happy Death Day.
Yeah, and it's like, oh, it's like Groundhog's Day, but with murder. I get it.
Yes.
Yeah. But I mean, one of Bill Murray's like greatest films, I'd say. It's like one of his most memorable, iconic films.
Of Harold Ramis's greatest films.
Yeah, this is them at the apex of their power, some would say.
This is, and this unfortunately was the very last Bill Murray, Harold Ramis film that ever was made, which we'll get into later on. But let's backtrack a little bit. We're the SNL nerds.
All right.
I'm your co-host, John Trumbull.
And I'm your co-host, Darren Patterson.
Yeah, but we decided to open with, you know, a thing that you hear in the movie a lot.
Yeah, I know. We probably confuse a lot of you. A lot of people are like, wait, what? Is this the SNL nerd? Am I in Pennsylvania now? No, that we were just joshing.
Yeah, we're incredible actors that we just assumed our characters and we went full method.
Acting!
Genius!
Thank you!
But let's read the little summary that we have on the back of the Groundhog Day Blu-ray here. Bill Murray is at his wry, wisecracking best in this riotous romantic comedy about a weatherman caught in a personal time warp on the worst day of his life. Teamed with a relentlessly cheerful producer, Andy McDowell, and a smart aleck cameraman, Chris Elliott, TV weatherman Phil Connors, Bill Murray, is sent to Punxsutawney, Pennsylvania to cover the annual Groundhog Day festivities. But on his way out of town, Phil is caught in a giant blizzard, which he failed to predict, and finds himself stuck in small-town hell. Just when things couldn't get worse, they get worse. Phil wakes up the next morning to find it's Groundhog Day all over again, and again, and again. Oh, it's very ominous.
Yeah, like the way that... I don't know about that description, because the way they describe it on the Blu-ray, it makes it sound a lot more wacky and zany than the movie actually is. The movie,
it is a
comedy, but it also has like a lot of dramatic moments. It also has a lot of dark comedic moments.
And that's interesting because apparently that was part of the disagreement or the struggle that Bill Murray and Harold Ramis had while they were shooting this movie was Ramis was like reminding Murray, yeah, well, remember, we're making a comedy. And Murray really wanted like more of the philosophical type material in there. But I think the final film has a nice balance between those two extremes.
It does, yeah. It does get kind of wacky and slapsticky. But it does get very like deep and philosophical about, you know, what does it mean when you're kind of living the same thing? Like, if you're like living the same life over and over again, do you change as a person? Like, what are any of us doing here? It has like, it gets very heady.
Yeah.
Yeah, it definitely has like a headier vibe. And then at some points it gets very rom-com-y, like a romantic, like what happens between him and his producer, Rita, played by Andy McDowell.
Yes, yes. But I think that's the beauty of it, because I think it's a premise that most everyone can relate to in some way. I think most everyone has felt like they're stuck in a rut in their life, and they feel like they're living the same day over and over and over again.
Right.
And I think most everybody's life has a certain amount of repetition to it.
Yeah, yeah, you're living. And, yeah, everybody has that thing where just, you know, they wake up, go to work, take the train to work, eat lunch at a certain time, and then leave, go back home, have dinner, go to sleep, and repeat the whole thing over again. It's like, you know, it's like a hamster on a wheel.
Yeah, yeah, and that can wear you down. You can get into a rut.
Absolutely.
And you can get into an existential funk.
What are we all doing here, man?
What does it all mean?
Oh, gotta buy a Lamborghini.
Yeah.
Something. Basically, it's a very simple premise. Bill Murray plays Phil Connors. He's a local weatherman in Pittsburgh. And like every year, he goes to Punxsutawney, Pennsylvania, for Groundhog's Day to report on the groundhog coming out of its hole and seeing its shadow. He's very jaded.
He's been doing this for 4 years, so he is totally over it. He is over this story.
Right.
He is over the town of Punxsutawney. He just is tired of it all.
He's done. And he actually at one point says, like as he's driving up there, tells his cameraman Larry, played by Chris Elliott, saying, "Yeah, this is my, I'm leaving." You know, I'm leaving the station after this. This is my last time doing this. I'm done with this. He just basically has a lot of sort of contempt for everything and everyone. Even, like, the people in town the people in town are actually really nice to him. He's like, "Hey, how's it going?" But he just treats everybody like, "Ugh, get away from me."
Yeah, he's a real
real dick.
And I think Bill Murray, he was a great choice for this movie because he can play a wonderful dick.
Yeah.
He's really good at playing dickish people.
Yeah.
But he can also be like a nice, charming guy. He can play both sides of that. And in the commentary that I listened to, I actually watched this movie twice. I watched it once with the Harold Ramis commentary.
Ooh.
And then I watched it a second time, appropriately enough, with the pop-up trivia track that they had. It's Needle Nose Ned's Picture-in-Picture track. Where Stephen Tobolowsky, who plays Needle Nose Ned.
Ned Ryerson.
he pops up throughout the movie and gives little bits of trivia.
Bing!
About the shooting of the movie, the making of the movie, and that sort of thing. And but Harold Ramis said in his commentary track that one of the people that they originally considered for the lead role of Phil Connors was Tom Hanks.
Yeah, and I read that too. I read that, and like after he said that, like, oh, I could totally see Tom Hanks doing this.
I could see Tom Hanks doing a nice job, but Harold Ramis said he ran into Tom Hanks a few years later after the movie had been done, and Tom Hanks was like, it's a good thing that I didn't do that movie or that you didn't put me in that movie because,
really?
Like, my persona is, like, I'm, like, the likable nice guy.
Yeah, the everyman.
And if it was me, everybody would be waiting for me to make that turn. And with Bill Murray, you don't necessarily know which way he's going to go. So it was a much better thing for your movie that I didn't do it.
Interesting. I didn't know Hanks said that.
I guess
that makes sense now. Wow.
So I'm like, I can sort of see the version with Tom Hanks, but I don't know if that's as good of a movie.
Yeah, I see what you mean. Because like in the beginning, you need somebody who can be like a real prick.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, you're still invested in him enough to see if he can like be a better person.
He's still likable enough that you stay with him through that.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I mean, to compare it to another Bill Murray movie, Scrooge. Actually, now that I kind of thought about it, like, I feel like like the tone they did in this movie, Groundhog Day, they mm-hmm. should have done it in Scrooge. Because I think,
yeah,
I mean, it's basically kind of the same thing where it's like this guy who's kind of a dick, and it's like through outside forces that kind of where he sees the sort of the error of his ways and yeah. becomes a better person. Like both movies had that same type of
track. Is true. We're doing a lot of Bill Murray redemption movies.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, with Scrooge, the tone was all over the place, whereas this, like, it has different. The tone is all over the place, but it's a lot more smoother transitions, I guess.
Yeah, I think it evolves nicely through the movie.
Evolve. That's a much better word than what I said. Smooth. It goes better. Nice.
It's not a competition, Darren.
It's always a competition.
Well, then I'm winning.
Oh, son of a bitch!
But so after Phil gets into town, he does his report and he does kind of a half-assed job on the report.
He has that one great line where he says, "Oh, this is after the groundhog doesn't see its shadow, and so mm-hmm. it's like six more weeks of winter." And he says, "This is the one time where television fails to capture the true excitement of a large squirrel predicting the weather."
Yes, yeah.
Just lines like that make me smile.
Yeah, and then she's like, "Okay, let's try that again without the sarcasm." He's like, "We got it." He just again could not give less of a shit.
Right, and of course the mayor of Punxsutawney.
Brian Doyle Murray.
That's right. Brother Brian.
Brother Brian, who was also an SNL cast member at one point, and as was Chris Elliott for a season, as was another actress in this movie, Robin Duke.
Right. Doris the Waitress.
So four SNL alum.
How about that, guys?
That's amazing.
Not too shabby.
And something, this is as good a place to mention it as any, something I was really surprised when I was rewatching the movie. This movie, Michael Shannon's film debut.
Yeah.
I actually texted you last night when I was watching the movie. I was like, holy shit, Michael Shannon is in this movie.
Yeah, towards the end of the movie, we see a young, you know, bright-eyed, bushy-tailed Michael Shannon in this thing.
He plays one half of the engaged couple.
Yes, Fred he plays.
Yeah, Fred. And he gets WrestleMania tickets from Bill Murray's character at the end.
He gets super psyched. Like, WrestleMania, no way!
Yeah. And I was like, I had no idea he was in this movie. And, Michael Shannon, he's got a great career today. He was, General Zod in the Man of Steel movie. He was in Knives Out last Christmas.
Knives Out's a fantastic film.
Great movie. Great movie. Go see that. And, I was like, oh, That's a kick.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome. And also another little trivia that I found out about this movie takes place in Punxsutawney, Pennsylvania.
Yep.
Not shot in Punxsutawney, Pennsylvania.
Nope.
Shot in Woodstock, Illinois.
Yeah, because apparently the real Punxsutawney, when they do the ceremony with the groundhog, it's outside of town. It's like 2 miles outside of town in like a park area.
Yeah, in the Gobbler's Knob.
Gobbler's Knob, that's the name of it.
Teehee.
And they wanted they wanted like more of a town square look so you could see the town around it. Right. So, and they were like scouting locations and they came to this place in Illinois, I think just to like stop and get a cup of coffee or something. And then they realized like, this is like the perfect place for us.
Yeah.
And so they were able to do that. And
yeah, but from what I read, the people in Punxsutawney were kind of, miffed that they didn't shoot there. So because mm-hmm. of that, they denied use of the real Punxsutawney film to be used in the movie. So they had to get
tragic.
I know This movie's built on lies.
If you're a big Punxsutawney authenticity nut, I mean,
I can imagine one man in the audience standing up like, "That's not the real Punxsutawney, Phil. This movie's bullshit."
You know, I mean, I've seen movies where it's like it's supposedly taking place in a place that I know well, and it really makes you aware of how much movies cheat geography, that sort of thing. Like I remember I used to live in Nashville, Tennessee, and there was a movie called I think The Thing Called Love. Uh-huh. And it was about aspiring country music singers, and they go to the Bluebird Cafe, which is this real famous location in Tennessee. And they shot it in Tennessee at the actual Bluebird Cafe. And then the main character of Samantha Mathis, she's living in a hotel that was supposedly across the street, but it's like in a whole different area of Nashville.
Yeah.
And it's just like, but it worked for the movie.
Yeah.
I mean, if you didn't know, you wouldn't have any idea, but if you know Nashville, it's hilarious.
Yeah, I mean, as a native New Yorker, like I always see that too. Like whenever they like a TV show shoots in Vancouver, but they tell you it's New York City. I can immediately tell, like, that's not.
Yeah.
That's not New York. There's no homeless people. The streets are clean. What is this?
Yeah, yeah.
Is this even a city? Crying out loud.
But, the movie has a nice look to it. I mean, it's got a nice, like, small town atmosphere.
Yeah, small town to feel. It. Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
And it's fun to see Bill Murray, because, like, they get caught in town because the blizzard that he was predicting was going to pass by the area. It hits in Punxsutawney and it strands them in town.
Right.
So they have to stay the night. And then Bill Connors, he wakes up the next morning and he discovers he's having the exact same day all over again, because he looks out the window of his hotel. There's no snow on the ground.
Right.
And
the radio plays the same thing. They play, you know, I Got You, Babe by Sonny and Cher.
The same song with the same morning DJ saying the exact same thing.
Like, it's Groundhog's Day.
Yeah.
He's in a bed and breakfast. He leaves his room. The same guy walks up the stairs saying, hey, what do you think? He says the exact same thing he said yesterday.
Yeah.
He said,
he's having the exact same conversations, and he goes and he has to do the report again. And it's fun to just see this gradually dawn on him. I'm reliving the same day twice.
Right.
And then he goes to bed again, and then the same thing happens, and it's like, whoa, what the heck is going on here?
Yeah, and like one thing I kind of appreciate it, and that they do in this movie, they never explain why he's repeating the same day again. It's like,
isn't that great?
Yeah, like there's no, like, it's not no gypsy curse or some witchcraft,
right?
Or like something magical happened, no Zoltan machine or anything like that.
It's yeah,
he's just reliving the same day again, and he doesn't know why. There's no guide to tell him it's. There's no one saying, hey, I know this this is happening because you're doing this and you need to do this in order to be free of this.
Right.
It's interesting to do that because, like, in a way, like, it brings in the audience a little bit more because, like, we're just as clueless as to why this is happening to him as he is.
Yeah, I mean, and it really makes you realize, like, how arbitrary most of those types of devices are.
Yeah.
And it's just like, it doesn't really matter why. Just get that out of the way and get to the fun stuff, which is him repeating the day and seeing how he reacts to it.
Yeah, like if the acting's good enough, then the writing's good enough, like audience members will like let that go. They'll be like, yeah. Oh, they'll just buy into it. It's like, oh, okay, he's just reliving the same day again for some
reason. And they had, like, at certain points when they were writing the script, they did have devices like that. There was, like, a vengeful ex-girlfriend who put a gypsy curse on him.
Yeah, gypsy curse.
Or something like that. They just decided to cut that out. I don't even know if they shot it. They might have just scripted it.
Oh. But what if there is no tomorrow? There wasn't one today.
Yeah.
I like
Like the writer Danny Rubin, in his original draft of it, he opened it up with Phil Connors already acclimated to living the same day over and over. So it just opened up with you're seeing him go through his day, but he's like apparently predicting things that are going to happen before they happen.
Oh.
And you're like, what is this? How did this happen? And the folks at the studio were like, well, you know, it might be interesting to see how him get into this and see him react to that. And they were like, well, why don't we just try it writing the other way? And then if you don't like it, we can get rid of it.
Okay.
And apparently Harold Ramis was originally like, oh, I really like this opening, and I promise you we'll keep it.
Right.
But they ultimately decided it was more effective to see him get into the situation.
Right.
And that, so.
I mean, it makes sense. I mean, for it to start in the middle, that might be a little too much for regular moviegoers, just because the concept, it takes a while for you to wrap your mind around.
So, it is like, a little high concept.
Yeah, you need to, like, ease them into it.
It might have been a little distancing, but yeah, but who knows?
Yeah, that's true. So he's realizing he's having the same day over and over again. He goes to a doctor played by Harold Ramis to see understand what's going on. You know, the doctor recommends he go see a psychiatrist. So the psychiatrist, I guess the only psychiatrist in town, seems a little ill-equipped for something like this.
He's like, oh, you know, I mostly do like marriages and stuff. I have an alcoholic now.
It's like you are a licensed like therapist, right? You're not like a veterinarian or anything like that, right? And then the therapist says, "Yeah, no, let's get into it." It's like, maybe we should meet tomorrow. And Bill's
He's not quite grasping Bill's problem,
right? And then later on, like, he's basically drinking at the bowling alley with, like, the town drunks, Gus and Ralph, played by Rick Dukeman and Rick Overton.
Yeah, both stand-up comics.
Both stand-up, great stand-up comics, and And as they're having the discussion, both of the drunks are totally drunk, so he drives them home. and they're talking about his predicament, and they're saying, well, you know, if you're having this thing where you're living the same day over and over again, that means there's no consequences to what you're doing now.
Right.
And he has this realization, like, oh, yeah, I think you're right. So then he goes off, he kind of drives crazy, hits some mailboxes just for the heck of it, drives on the railroad tracks.
Yeah.
Cops, you know, chase him down, gets to a car chase, and he gets arrested.
Thrown in jail,
And he wakes up, and he's back in bed, and the cops aren't looking for him.
At the bread and breakfast, yeah.
Yeah, and he's like, hey! So now this whole thing that seemed like weird to him seems like a superpower now, where he can just do whatever he wants with no repercussions.
Yeah, yeah, no consequences. So he explores the ramifications of that, and he moves into, like, petty crime. He, like, steals... Yeah. A thing of money from an armored truck when the guys aren't the guards aren't really attending it as well as they should. He finds out information about women in town so that he can sleep with them the next day by pretending to be an old high school friend of theirs.
Yeah, which is what Ned Ryerson basically did to him. You know.
Yeah.
Did we mention? We mentioned Ned. You know,
we mentioned Ned in passing, but I mean, Stephen Tobolowsky, he deserves a special shout out because he's so good in this movie.
He just chews up that scenery.
I mean, he's very over the top. I mean, if you got any more of this character, he would get very grating, but it's just enough. So he's entertaining without ever crossing line into obnoxious.
Yeah, he doesn't go into like Steve Urkel territory. He just gets right at the edge.
Yeah, yeah. And he was. In the documentary I watched about the making of the movie, he was talking about like he was working on the lines, the dialogue by himself, and it was just getting bigger and bigger and bigger. So like when he went into audition, he was like, "I'm going to warn you, I'm pretty big at this point. This is going to be really big."
Just bing.
But they liked what he did so much that they gave him the job before he left the room.
Wow, fantastic!
So and that's become probably his best known role. I mean, he's a great character actor. You've seen him in a million and one things.
Yeah.
He's in Memento.
Oh, that's right.
And you know, another movie about a fellow having problems with his memory and
look at
repeating
you.
And stuff. And
look at you connecting those dots.
That'd be an interesting double feature, wouldn't it? Memento and Groundhog Day.
I'd be down for that.
Yeah.
Am I right? Right.
But yeah, Stephen Tobolowsky he's great. He's just hilarious.
One of the greats.
In this movie. Yeah.
And yeah, of course, and Phil just goes on to just do whatever he wants with his life. He smokes cigarettes.
He's gorging himself with food in the cafe.
Yeah, at one point he's talking with Rita, the producer. He like shoves an entire piece of cake in his mouth.
Yeah, it's just a whole thing of angel food cake.
Like, he didn't even bite. He just like oh.
And he's just got this big smear of frosting at the corner of his mouth that's there for the rest of the scene. And apparently Bill Murray, he did not do what actors usually do when they have an eating scene. And, you know, you're shooting a movie.
Yeah.
You're doing a lot of takes. They have a spit bucket there so that you can spit out the food so you're not gorging yourself with, like, tons of food.
So you don't get the itis.
Yeah, so Bill Murray was just like, no, I'll just eat it. And he ate for real all through... Who knows how many takes of this scene?
Oh no!
And apparently, he did get sick from the angel food cake.
Of course, you're gonna get sick. Like, but, look, I love angel food cake as much as the next guy, but
and you know, it tastes very light. You think like, oh, I can pound down a lot of this stuff, but before you know it,
you got the sugars.
But Bill Murray went method.
I appreciate that, but like, Bill, come on, don't know your body. Don't do that.
But that's funny, I think.
But and he also, like we said before, he uses his newfound power to, you know, get women into bed. He finds this one woman, Nancy, pretends to know her from high school. Then they start making out, and he calls her Rita, his producer's name, while they're making out. And then she's like, "Oh, who's Rita?" It's like, "Oh, that's no, I called you Nancy. You know, I'm in love with you. Marry me."
Yeah.
And they're like, oh.
Which he does just with no fear because he knows he doesn't have to face any consequences of this the next day.
Yeah.
He can just get his jollies that night. And
yeah, exactly. Gets his rocks off and just fuck right off.
during the cafe scene with Rita, I mean, at one point he starts to despair of with all this repetition, it's getting him down.
Yeah,
and he decides to end it all, and he climbs up to.
Oh, that was later.
Well, that is later. I might be getting a little mixed up, but okay. You know, it's easy to like lose track where you are in this movie because there is a certain amount of repetition. But he starts to despair and he decides to commit suicide. And he
that's where it gets dark.
It gets dark, and we have a little montage of him committing suicide in various ways.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think that happens like a little bit later on because he realizes. Mm-hmm. Like, because he just kept, you know, he just does the same thing over and over again. And I think he also starts to fall for Rita. But then he realized that Rita will never, like, remember all this nice stuff he does for him. So he's like, he realized he's falling for her. But she, like, every day is like a fresh slate for her. So she doesn't remember anything about
it. Right. So even if he has the best day and night ever with her. Right. It will not make any difference because he cannot break out of this cycle.
Yeah, so the fact that he's in this cycle and this woman that he starts to really have feelings for will never be, you know, she'll never feel the same way back. It starts to depress him and he starts to get suicidal. And at one point he says, like, oh, this will keep on happening until I, you know, maybe do something with this groundhog. And he ends up kidnapping the groundhog.
He hijacks the groundhog after the ceremony when the groundhog's put into a truck. And they have a real groundhog.
Yeah, yeah.
That they apparently bred them for this movie.
They bred them for the movie?
Yeah, they had a wrangler or a groundhog person who, like, bred groundhogs for this movie.
Oh.
Because they couldn't get the official Punxsutawney.
Oh, okay.
Phil, so... Of course, you breed a groundhog.
Of course. What else is there to do?
Or he had a few different ones. But there's a very funny scene with him like letting the groundhog drive this truck that he's hijacked.
Don't drive angry.
And they were saying that during this sequence, they used about everything they could. Like, Bill Murray's like improvising because they don't really know what the groundhog is going to do. And at one point, the groundhog starts sort of scampering over the wheel. And apparently, like, right after that take, the groundhog... bit Bill Murray on the finger, bit through his leather glove.
Oh, Jesus.
And bit him so hard that he had to, like, go to the hospital and get rabies shots.
Wow.
So
Bill Murray really went through with this.
He suffered for his art.
Got bit by a groundhog, ate himself sick.
And he was not in a good place during the shooting of this movie because apparently he was going through a divorce at the time.
Oh, fuck.
And that was... got on him, so he was apparently not the greatest person to work with in this movie, and he and Harold Ramis started to tangle a little bit.
Yikes.
So, yeah, Bill Murray was doing things like calling Harold Ramis in the middle of the night to talk about possible script changes, and after a certain point, Harold Ramis was like, I don't want to do this anymore, so he kind of pawned Bill Murray off on... He had Danny Rubin, the screenwriter, fly in to work with Murray.
Oh, wow.
And I think this was part of the reason for the rift.
I mean, I get it. I mean, they've known each other forever since like the early 80s. So
since like the 70s.
70s, rather. Yeah. So for Harold to be like, yeah, talk to him. I don't want to talk to you. Like, that's got to kind of mess you up a little bit.
But, you know, if Bill Murray was being a dick, as Bill Murray can be at times, apparently.
Difficult genius.
I can understand where both sides were coming
from. Yeah, no, I understand. I see things from both sides. Yeah, that's true. But yeah, it's kind of a bummer.
But interesting, in the suicide montage, Bill Murray, he has some dialogue. He's like, I've been shot, poisoned, electrocuted, drowned. He like runs through all these things, all these ways that he died. And apparently, except for the electrocution, those were all ways that they tried to kill... Rasputin, the mad monk, back in Russia.
Oh, I
read that on the IMDb trivia page, and I was like, "Well, that's really interesting."
Huh? I did not catch that.
A little, yeah. I want to see a movie about Rasputin with Bill Murray as Rasputin now.
Bill Murray as Rasputin.
I think that would be fun.
Rasputin Murray.
I
could see it. All right, Hollywood, get on it.
Yeah.
Wow. But yeah, this is where the movie takes a dark turn, because like you said, like he tries to electrocute himself in the tub with a toaster, he, you know, drives off the cliff with the Punxsutawney Phil,
right.
Gets hit by a truck, jumps off a building, and he realizes he can't die, so he's like, he thinks he's immortal, you know, he's a god, he's not the god.
He's a god.
Right.
That's gotta be so weird. I mean, can you imagine, like, you know what the experience of dying is like. And then you wake up the next morning, but you still have the memories of what that is like.
Yeah, that's got to be really trippy. Yeah, this is where the movie gets, again, it steers away from the zany comedy and gets into like this really heady, trippy kind of movie.
But you know what? I like it when like a movie that has a nice optimistic ending. And this movie, I don't think I'm spoiling it by saying it does have an upbeat ending.
Yeah, yeah.
He
very
does
much
break
so.
Out of the cycle and falls in love with a girl, and the girl falls in love with him, and
right.
and all that. But I like it when a movie gets real dark before that turn.
Dark,
you know?
Before the light.
Like you see that in It's a Wonderful Life. You see that in another one of my favorites, The Fisher King. You know,
oh, wow.
I haven't seen
that movie in a minute.
Those movies get like really dark before they have the optimistic ending. So it feels to me more like the optimistic ending is really earned.
Yeah, no, I agree. Because I think, you know, as the movie goes on, the only person he's able to really talk about it is the producer, Rita, who he has feelings for. And, like,
yeah.
he starts to learn more about Rita. Like, cause, I mean, Rita's character is very upbeat and optimistic.
Yeah.
Like, the exact opposite of what he is.
Yeah.
Like,
she's very sunny.
Yeah, she's very sunny. She loves the small town that they're in. She loves that everybody is very friendly and outgoing. And she loves it all. And then he's just trying, like, maybe... I mean, at first, he's just trying to nail her.
Yeah.
But then he gets to know her and, he starts to be more intrigued by her and starts to fall for her. Like, he starts to learn what she likes, like, you know, French poetry, and he reads more French poetry. And
he learns, like, her favorite drink, so he can order it at the bar.
Yeah,
and
the vermouth drink.
And he like, bit by bit, he engineers this perfect afternoon evening for them so that she starts to fall for him.
Right.
And it's... And you can see him, like, sort of gradually figuring it out. And then you can see him, like, repeating that to the point where it's, like, totally artificial.
Yeah, exactly. Like, he's just going through the motions.
Right.
And, like, she catches on to that.
Right.
It's like, oh, why are you doing this? You're just trying to, nail me.
Yeah.
You know, which he is, but then he starts to sort of not. Like, he's slowly becoming a better person.
Yeah. He does so slowly start to improve. And at one point he like gets her on his side enough, or he wins her over enough that she's with him in his hotel room at midnight, and then she's like very surprised when the day doesn't flip over at midnight.
Right? It's like, oh, I thought you'd like disappear or something.
Yeah, and he's like, no, I never said it happened at midnight.
It's like, oh, you son of a bitch!
And she's like, you knew I was waiting for midnight, and it's very nice. Like, the Bill Murray and Andy McDowell, they have a nice relationship in this movie. They have a nice chemistry together.
Yeah, a little nice rapport.
Yeah.
And and I think at this point, he starts to realize, like, you know, he's always been, like, kind of a dick. He doesn't really like himself that much.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't really, like, deserve being with her.
Mm-hmm.
So he honestly...
There's a montage of him being slapped by her.
Yes.
Where you see about 10 times where he's like being slapped by her in various locations where he's just goes off the rails in their evening.
Yes, very much so. He actually tries to be a better person. He learns, he tries to help people in his around town. He actually, there's this homeless man who he always passes, like, in the past, he just always ignores him.
Yeah, he doesn't give him any cash when he passes him in the morning, and then he runs into him later in the day, and he's, and it's winter, and he's having a tough time of it, and he takes him into the cafe, he gets him a hot meal,
right.
He takes him into the hospital,
right,
and then he discovers that nothing he can do can prevent this man from dying.
Yeah, that's the other thing that happens. Like, that the man, the homeless, he's an old man, and he dies that day. Like, no matter what he does, like, he tries to get some soup in him. He tries to, help him any way he can. But, like, every day he dies. And even like, one of the nurses says, like, yeah, some people are just old and just die.
Yeah.
So, like, that really kind of weighs on him.
So he discovers his limits in this situation. He discovers that, despite him being trapped in there and having all this knowledge, he can't, there are certain things he can't do. He is not a god.
Yeah, so again, another like heady, trippy, psychological moment. It's like, wow. And he also tries to be a better person to his crew, to Larry and Rita. He brings in donuts and coffee, and he's reading books. He learns how to play piano at one point. When actually in a funny scene where he walks up to a piano teacher and says, hey, I'd like to learn how to play piano today.
Right.
And she's like, well, I'm actually busy with a student right now.
Well, here's $1,000.
And she's like, oh, come right in.
Yeah, and she throws out the little girl that she was teaching. And you see him, he starts to gradually master this piece. I think it was Rachmaninoff. Something like that.
Gesundheit.
But he's... You know it if you heard it.
Yeah. All I know is like chopsticks from like the movie Big. And
apparently Bill Murray, he did... Yeah, that is actually him playing in the movie. You hear him, like, he did his best to learn this piece. He doesn't read music, but he learned it by ear. And so you hear him, like, playing it sort of okay.
Yeah.
And that's actually Bill Murray playing.
How far out?
So, yeah.
I did not know
So that's pretty cool.
Huh. How about that?
Mm-hmm.
I do, wow. And, so yeah, so he is becoming a better person. He kind of realizes that he's been a dick his whole life, and he wants to be a better person.
He learns empathy.
Yes, he learns empathy. He wants to be the type of person that, like, is deserving of someone like Rita.
And then we see, like, after he's learned this lesson and he's gradually becoming a better person, we have this montage of him going through his day and going through the town and performing good deeds.
Yeah, like he helps some women, Jack, you know, fix their tire.
Right.
In the car.
He catches a kid who's falling out of a tree.
Yeah. It's like, what do you say? What do you say? And the kid runs away.
Yeah.
It's like, you never thanked me, you little son of a
bitch. Yeah, and he's like, I'll see you tomorrow. Maybe. Oh. And Hal Ramis said this was sort of inspired by like a thought he had about Superman, which was like, if you think about Superman, he really shouldn't be able to justify, like, spending any time with Lois Lane, because there's probably always something else in the world happening that he could go prevent or stop or help.
Oh, wow.
That, you know, yeah. Like, Superman should be, like, flying around the world 24/7 just doing good deeds.
Wow, yeah.
But
holy moly, yeah.
So that's kind of what Phil is doing at this point in the movie.
Jeez, I never thought of that. Yeah, he should be, like, policing the world. It's like, he's trying to make time with Lois while somebody's getting mugged.
But Superman deserves some time to himself.
Yeah, Batman can handle it or something, right? Wonder Woman's around.
Right.
Green Lantern, he's got that ring.
Exactly.
Yeah, all right. That's how I'm going to justify it.
Yeah.
Wow, I never had that thought. Wow.
I've just ruined Superman for Darren, wow, ladies and gentlemen. Right, well, so.
Jesus. Wait a... All right, well, I don't know what to say.
I've ruined the Man of Steel for you.
You ruined the Man of Steel for me!
Sorry.
Son of a beasting.
But I thought that was an interesting take on it. But
right, and so, you know, Phil's learning piano more and more. And actually, by his third or fourth lesson, he's actually getting really good. And
mm-hmm.
Piano teacher had this one cool line of life where it's like, oh, not bad, Mr. Connor. You say this is your first lesson? And Phil's like, yes, but, you know, my dad was a piano mover, so.
Yeah. Right, that totally scans. That totally scans.
That's hilarious.
But, yeah, and we see him just gradually become a better and better person throughout the movie. And we see him, like, on the last, what turns out to be the last iteration of the day. And he's like the Mr. Big Shot in the town. He's
right.
If they had a key to the city, they would give it to him.
Key to the city. So. Yeah. Yeah. Cause like in the last scene, well, in the end of the day, like there's this big Groundhog's Day party, which mm-hmm. before he's always just blown it off. Never gone to.
Right.
But in this time, he, not only is he at the party, he's like playing jazz piano
right
in front of everybody, and everybody's loving him for it.
And everybody in the town is thanking him. They're like, oh, well, thank you for helping my fiance to go through with the marriage. Thank you for fixing my husband's back. Now he can help around the house.
Right.
He bought all this insurance from insurance salesman Ned Ryerson.
Yeah.
Like,
everybody loves him. And at one point, they had that bachelor auction.
Yeah.
Where he, you know, they push up Phil up. Phil, you should go up there. And, like, you know, like two ladies are bidding on him, and then Andy McDowell bids $339 for him, and everybody's right. like, whoa.
Which is like everything she has in her checking account. She, like, yes. holds up her checkbook.
Yeah, like, and for a producer, you only have $339 in your...
Well, she's bad with money.
Oh.
but, and they have a really nice romantic evening.
Yeah, and together. At that point, he's like, you know, like, even if this is the only day we're together, and if tomorrow, you know, none of this happens, I'm happy now.
Yeah.
And it's like, so this is fine for me.
He's learned to appreciate the moment and enjoy the moment and just be in the moment.
Yeah, very much so. It's a very beautiful thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And then the next day rolls around, and it's February 3rd. It's like he made it.
There's snow on the ground.
Yeah.
And Andy McDowell is still there with him. In bed with him.
And he has love in his life.
Yeah.
Love in his life.
And they go outside together, and he says, let's live here.
Yeah.
We'll rent to start. and apparently Harold Ramis said in the commentary that he came up with the line, let's live here, and Bill Murray because Murray is apparently more cynical than Ramis was, he added the line, "Let's rent to start." But I think that's such a great last line. I think it's just a wonderful button at the end of it.
That's a pretty great line, yeah.
That's a great line.
Yeah. I mean, it always kind of weirded me out. It's like, well, they're coworkers. Is this going to work okay?
They fell in love. Well,
I mean, if he does,
I think they earned their happily ever after, though.
Yeah, you know? I do. Maybe he'll leave. Like he'll leave Pittsburgh, like he said. Maybe he'll be a weatherman in Punxsutawney.
Who knows?
Who knows?
Who knows?
But wow, that was pretty quick. Yeah, that was Groundhog's Day. It was like it's a pretty straightforward film. It's more, there's not like a huge plot to it, but it's definitely a movie that'll like leave an impression on you.
I mean, I remember when I first heard about this movie and saw the previews for it. I don't remember seeing it in the theaters. I think I caught it after. And I thought the premise sounded really weird because I was like, he's just living the same day over and over? And you would think that might be a really boring movie, but because he's doing different things during the various iterations of the day, and also you see different parts of the day.
Right.
It was pointed out to me, I don't remember if I read this on the IMDb trivia page or in the documentary or something. I kind of gorged myself on Groundhog Day for the last day.
Gotcha.
And but as the movie goes on, we're sort of gradually moving through the day. Like early in the movie, you see his morning. Then around the middle of the movie, you're sticking with his afternoon. And then in the later portions of the movie, you're seeing his evening.
Right.
So you're seeing different portions of the day. And that helps it from not being very monotonous.
Yeah, that's true. Like, he doesn't go through the same motions like he did earlier. Like, you know, he gets out of his bed and breakfast. He walks down the street. He has an interaction with the owner of the bed and breakfast. Mm-hmm. And, you know, which he had this funny thing where he says to the owner of the bed and breakfast, like, "Oh, do you like when he first goes through the same day over and over?
Are you going to leave today?"
No. She says, "Oh, do you ever have deja vu?" Mm-hmm. And she's like, "No, I don't think so, but I can check with the kitchen."
Right.
Like, I don't know why I get a kick out of that.
That's a cute line.
Yeah, yeah. But he goes through the same motions, like, you know, sees Ned Ryerson, steps in the huge pothole filled with slush.
Mm-hmm.
And, but then he, like, does different things that kind of. I don't know what I'm trying to say here.
He changes his circumstances.
Yeah, he changes circumstances, sees things from other perspectives and mm-hmm. whatnot, and it kind of changes things around for him.
And something else I found very interesting about the movie, as they said that throughout the movie, Phil Connors, he runs through the Kubler-Ross five stages of death and dying, the five stages of grief that you go through. He goes through denial, anger, depression, bargaining, and ultimately acceptance. And I thought that was really interesting. Like, because like the first couple of days, he is in denial that this is happening. He's like, "What is happening? How is this happening?" Then he gets angry, and that's when he's like acting out and doing the adolescent things, like sleeping with women, committing crimes, committing suicide,
punching Ned Ryerson in the face.
Well, yeah, the suicide thing is when he goes into depression.
Yeah,
you know, because he's like, "This is hopeless. There's no way out of this." And, you know, the bargaining, I think, is when he tries to change his circumstances and become a better person. And ultimately, he accepts it by genuinely becoming a better person. He's not becoming a better person just to get out of the cycle. He becomes a better person because he wants to be a better person and he genuinely wants to help these people.
Wow.
And that's how he finally breaks out of it. When he's no longer like, just thinking about himself and what he can get out of it. So I thought that was really fascinating.
Yeah, I totally didn't. That totally went over my head. That's pretty genius.
And that's something that I think is really fascinating about this movie, is that all these people with various philosophies, they see something of themselves and their philosophy in the movie. Apparently, like, Buddhists relate to the movie. Christians relate to the movie, like, right. all these various philosophies, like, they see something in there, and it's really, like, kind of universal in that regard.
Yeah, I mean, it is a very, like, philosophical, heady movie. Like, you think it's, like, I mean, the first time I saw it, I didn't see it in the theater. I mean, this came out, I was in high school.
93, yeah.
Yeah, so I was, like, freshman year of high school, so, like, I didn't see it in the theaters, but I think I saw it later on DVD, and, like, I just expected it to be, like, this wacky kind of comedy,
mm-hmm.
and then when I saw it, I was like, "Oh wow, this is really—it's like deeper and more like you said, philosophical than I thought it'd be.
Yeah.
It's like, it has like elements of being like a dark comedy. It has elements of being a rom-com. It has elements of being like a dramedy.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, but it all makes sense.
Yeah.
It all works well. And it's like, so I, when I, after I watched it, I was like, huh, I was not expecting that.
Yeah. It's got more going on than you might think, initially. So yeah, it's, yeah, there's some quotes like, let's see, it's Hindus and Buddhists see versions of reincarnation here, and Jews find great significance in the fact that Connors is saved only after he performs mitzvahs, good deeds, and is returned to earth, not heaven, to perform more.
L'chaim.
Yeah, so it has even been described by some spiritual leaders as the most spiritual film of our time.
Whoa.
The curse is lifted when Bill Murray blesses the day he has just lived. Wrote critic Rick Brookhiser, and his reward is that the day is taken from him. Loving life includes loving the fact that it goes. So, yeah, wow. That's kind of heady stuff.
Jesus, that
from
that touched my heart.
Yeah,
that's really beautiful, man.
And I think another thing we should mention is that there's one of the big things about this movie is there's all this speculation about how long he spends in the time loop.
Oh, like how many days? How many? Times
how many days? Or how many weeks? Or months? Or years? Or and oh, there's yeah. like a lot of there's a. I mean, at one point in the script, he spent 10,000 years in it.
10,000 years.
10,000 years, and that has another tie into Buddhist doctrine because apparently it takes 10,000 years for a soul to evolve to its next level. So
I mean, okay.
I
just figure he was there as long as it takes to get really good at piano. But
right. But I mean, like, you could, there are articles online that speculate on this because, like, there's the thing is, like, you spend 100,000 hours or 10,000 hours on something, I forget which it is,
okay,
to become an expert in something.
Huh. All right. I mean,
so,
that's fair enough.
And some people have, like, tried to work this out mathematically. Like, you see, like, a certain amount of days in the
right.
movie, and then they figure out how many days are implied because he becomes a pianist, he learns French, he becomes great at ice sculpting.
Ice sculpting is in this thing. Yeah.
He develops all these skills
right.
and stuff. Like, apparently he fixes that guy's back.
Oh, yeah. He's a doctor, I guess.
Yeah.
It's like Dr. Connors?
So, you know, like, everybody has different theories. Like, in the commentary, Harold Ramis says, I figure it was like 10 years that he was in the loop.
Wow.
And then apparently Ramis walked that back later and he was like, no, I think I was off on that. It was probably more like 30 or 40 years.
Wow.
And it's interesting to speculate.
Yeah, I just thought it was like a couple of months. I didn't think,
right.
I wasn't thinking years, but I guess that is possible.
You could make a case that it could be years.
Huh. Wowzers.
I don't know. How long do you guys think?
Yeah.
You spent in the loop. Let us know.
Tweet at us, guys.
And, tweet at us.
Actually, speaking of tweets,
mm-hmm.
we put the word out on the Twitters that we were doing this, and yeah, we heard a few things. Like, actually, the one tweet that we got was from Calm of My Hairiest at Batman's Balls.
We our fans have the most interesting screen names, man.
Yeah, I don't. Let's not go into that. But he tweets at us, any opinions on the official virtual reality video game of Groundhog's Day that ostensibly functions as a sequel?
And I did not know about this until we started researching this.
Yeah,
this,
apparently there's a video game out.
Yeah.
A virtual reality PlayStation game that's from the
yeah. Sony Pictures
VR.
Virtual Reality Division, along with game developer Tequila Works, developed a sequel to the film via way of a virtual reality video game, Groundhog Day, Like Father, Like Son. And it was released on September 17th, 2019. So not that
wow.
long ago. They announced it last Groundhog's Day. The game has the player take on the role of Phil's son, Phil Connors Jr., who similarly becomes trapped in a time loop while in Punxsutawney and requires the player to figure out how to escape it. It sounds like a neat idea for a game.
Yeah.
This is like the extent of my knowledge of it.
Yeah. I mean, if you go on YouTube, you could see the game played out.
Oh, that's interesting.
But,
okay.
Yeah, it's, I mean, I don't know what to think about this. It's interesting.
That's a neat idea.
Yeah, it's a neat idea. I mean, I don't know. I wouldn't think to like make Groundhog's Day into a video game, but But it's
but it sounds like an interesting challenge. There's also a stage adaptation. They did a musical of it. Let's see.
Groundhog's Day.
Stephen Sondheim was interested in it, but apparently that version never came to pass. They did it with a book by Danny Rubin, who was the original writer of the movie, or one of them. He co-wrote it with Harold Ramis, because Ramis rewrote him. So it's a book by Danny Rubin, directed by Matthew Warchus, choreography by Peter Darling, design, and original score and lyrics by Minchin, who was apparently mentioned earlier. Tim Minchin, yeah. He was an Australian comedian and lyricist. And Broadway performances began March 2017. It was well-received, with both the London and Broadway shows receiving a number of nominations and awards, including the Laurence Olivier Award for Best New Musical for the London production. So that's interesting. I don't think it lasted very long, because it's obviously not still playing on Broadway, but...
Yeah, I don't remember.
That is interesting. But, I mean, that just is another testament to how universal and how beloved this movie is.
Yeah, a lot of people love it.
And, like, Harold Ramis and... Bill Murray have both become honorary grand marshals of the Groundhog Day parade in Punxsutawney.
That's pretty neat.
Yeah, I think Ramis is gone. I would be very surprised if Bill Murray ever did, but it doesn't seem like the sort of thing he would do.
I mean, he does stuff like that. He, like, appears in people's weddings and bartends at Chili's or P.F. Chang's or whatever.
Maybe if he was in the right mood, but I don't know. That seems like a lot to do, taking a big trip.
Yeah.
But should we talk a little about how Bill Murray and Ramis kind of fell out?
Because
this was a big thing.
Yeah, I mean, I only know like a little bit of the story.
You
probably know more than I do.
Well, I mean, Harold Ramis, he didn't talk about it for years. Like on the Blu-ray that I have, Ramis did a commentary. And I'm not sure what year it was. I think it was like 15 years later.
Okay.
Or maybe 10 years later, whatever. Yeah. But he was still being very discreet about it. And he wasn't really alluding to that.
Right.
But then after a certain number of years, he did become a little more open about it and talk about, and Bill Murray just was done with him after this movie and was not talking to him.
Wow.
And they ran into each other. Like a few places, like a bar mitzvah or like a wake. Mm-hmm. And I think they exchanged some few pleasantries, but they just basically did not talk after this movie. And it really affected Ramis pretty deeply, I think, because they were pretty tight.
Yeah, no.
And they'd worked very closely together. And some of the speculation was, some people were saying that... Bill Murray might have resented Ramis a little bit because Ramis was very responsible for Bill Murray's screen persona, because they'd worked together on a lot of stuff like Stripes and Caddyshack,
Ghostbusters.
And the Ghostbusters movies. And so Ramis had done a lot to really shape what we think of as Bill Murray's screen persona.
Oh, so interesting. Okay.
But you know, it's hard to say because Bill Murray never really has talked about it publicly.
Right.
Because he's generally a private guy, I think.
Yeah, he's a pretty, he's an enigma.
But when Harold Ramis was having his problems, because, you know, he unfortunately died very early, they did reconcile at Brian Doyle Murray's recommendation. Bill Murray reached out, and he went to him, and then they talked together when Ramis was basically on his deathbed.
Mended the fence.
Apparently so, yeah. Okay. We don't really know what they said, and you know, it's not really any of our business.
All right. I mean, but it sounds like because you mentioned earlier that Murray was going through a divorce, and it sounded like he really needed Harold Ramis to be like as a friend.
Yeah,
seems like he just needed somebody to vent with. But like, I guess Harold was. I mean, I'm just speculating. This ain't based on nothing. But it just seems like maybe Harold, maybe he was. You know, he was venting too much on him or laying too much on him, and which may be why he was passing him off to David.
Yeah, I mean, who knows? I mean, because apparently, like, Murray was acting out during this movie. He was, like, coming to the set late, and he was giving Ramis a lot of grief. Hmm. So.
Wow. All right.
Yeah, and.
I mean, it happens all the time. Like, anytime anybody works with somebody for a long amount of time, they're, you know, rough feathers get ruffled. Like, you know, people turn, people become different people as the years go on. Like, you know, happens with the Beatles and other bands. And
And I mean, they didn't speak together, speak to each other for 21 years after this movie.
Wow.
But I think Murray was rather affected by Ramis's death, because he, the year that Ramis passed away, Bill Murray was presenting at the Academy Awards.
Yeah, I remember
that. He was co-presenting the award for best cinematographer. And after he read the nominees, he said, "Oh, and we forgot one: Harold Ramis for Caddyshack, Ghostbusters, and Groundhog Day."
Yeah, I remember that. And like, then the audience like just burst into applause, and he looked like he was welling up with tears. He looked like he was like about to, he was gonna like lose it at any moment.
And this is Ramis passed away in February, so this is like just weeks, maybe a month after Ramis passed away. And
I remember that. Yeah, that was
that messed me up.
That messed me up a little bit. But dude, I don't. Wow.
But yeah, I mean, it's just a shame, because I mean, we got such great things out of their previous collaborations, and it's just too bad that they had that falling out and we didn't get more of that. I mean, because it would have been great to see what movies they could have made together. Ramis, apparently at one point he approached, or he had somebody reach out to Bill Murray about possibly having him in his movie The Ice Harvest. They were considering Bill Murray for a couple parts in that.
Wow, yeah, I remember that. I forgot he did The Ice Harvest.
Well, I mean, Ramis did, but Bill Murray did not.
No, I mean, I forgot Ramis did The Ice Harvest. Oh, yeah, yeah.
And, but,
what part would he have played?
There were a couple ones, and I can't remember because I haven't seen that movie, but...
Okay. I thought it was okay.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that's, I mean, and I guess that's Groundhog Day, but yeah, that's, I mean, that's a real shame that they had to, that they had that falling out just over...
Yeah, I mean, I'm glad that, that Bill Murray made a point of reaching out and... to him before he passed, and it's still such a shame that that Ramis went as early as he did.
Yeah, it's a big old bag of bummers.
Yeah,
as they say. Do they say that?
You did.
Oh, that's good enough for me.
Okay.
Groundhog Day. I don't know. I don't know how to end this. But yeah, that's a big old shame. Holy Toledo.
Yeah, but I mean. We've got this great movie that will be with us.
Yeah, this, I mean, this movie, and, the movie still holds up. It's still...
Yeah, it still works great.
Still works, still relevant, still funny, still, like, you know.
And a lot of people, like, still get something out of it, which is which is pretty amazing. I mean, and you don't have that with a lot of comedies.
No, not a lot. Like, a lot of... I mean, a lot of comedies are just make you laugh.
Yeah.
But how many make you laugh and think?
I mean, yeah, that's an exceptional thing when it's a comedy that is funny and also speaks to you as a human being, and you can get something out of that, and that affects you as a person.
Right, and it's not like, I mean, it has a message it's trying to say, but it's not preachy about it.
No, it doesn't beat you over the head.
Yeah, I mean, much like with Phil Connor's character, you know, Bill Murray's character, you have to kind of just see what's going on and figure it out for yourself.
Right,
like different people take away different messages from it.
Yeah, and this movie has really kind of grown in people's estimation over the years. Like I think Roger Ebert gave it like 3 stars initially, but then over the he eventually included it in his collection of the great movies.
Right,
and
I mean, I think when this movie came out, like it did well, it did extremely well.
Yeah,
but I think people thought it was good. But then as time goes on, it kind of got elevated to great.
Yeah, it's...
or exceptional.
There was a funny thing. I don't know if I can find it right away. But one of the reviews like literally said, "Oh, this is never going to be in..." okay, wait. Hang on a minute.
Okay.
I'm so close to finding this. Okay, yeah. Desson Howe of the Washington Post noted that even though the film is a good Bill Murray vehicle, Groundhog will never be designated a national film treasure by the Library of Congress. And you know what happened in 2006?
What happened in 2006?
It was selected by the National Film Preservation Board for preservation by the Library of Congress.
What?
So it is one of those films that is in our national registry and that has been preserved.
Who saw that coming?
So...
Yeah, I mean, this film.
I mean, how great is that?
That's right.
That's pretty amazing.
Sticking right to you, man.
It's got a 96% certified fresh rating at Rotten Tomatoes. And it has a score of 72 out of 100 at Metacritic.
Nice.
Indicating generally favorable reviews.
Well earned, I say.
Yes.
Well earned. All right. And yeah, that's the episode, guys. Thanks again for listening. Thanks so much for, you know, not saying anything while we talk and jabber. Well, I mean, they can't really talk. We're the only ones talking.
What?
I don't know.
Oh, I thought people can call in.
No, we disconnected the phones. I don't know.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That's too bad.
Yeah, and that's our podcast. And yeah, if you want to follow me, I'm on Twitter and Instagram at Darren Credible, D-A-R-I-N Credible. If you're in Montclair, New Jersey, I got a show on the 22nd on Wednesday at the Claire Story Art Gallery. If you want to swing by
cool.
for that. Yeah, I'm doing big things.
All right.
And yeah. Follow me on Twitter at Darren Credible.
And you can follow me on Twitter at Trumbull Comic, T-R-U-M-B-U-L-L Comic.
Yeah.
And you can follow the show's Twitter account at SNL Nerds Show.
Right. And as always, you can listen to us on Spotify, Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or at non-productive.com, where you can donate to our Patreon and give us some money.
Yeah.
Sweet, sweet money.
You can just go to non-productive.com and just donate to the Patreon under SNL Nerds.
Yeah, yeah. And also, next episode, new episode of SNL coming out with Adam, he has to know I fought for him, Driver.
He needs to know.
He needs to know.
He needs to know that I fought for him. Adam Driver making his grand return. It's his third time hosting, I believe.
Third time's the charm.
And with Halsey as the musical guest.
Halsey, second time's the charm.
Mm-hmm. Well, she's been on as a musical guest, and then she came back as a host in a musical
guest. Well, yeah, so it's her second time.
Yeah, well, I mean, but third time altogether on the show.
What?
Well, she was a musical guest, and then she was a host and musical guest, right?
Yeah. So, okay. Yeah. All right. Okay. I think you confused me with your words.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, I guess it is. It's her third time. Yeah, okay.
All right.
All right.
Are we okay?
I'm
is this going to be a thing?
I'm a little tired.
All right, yeah. All right. Do you want to lie down a little bit?
I think I do.
Okay.
I need to see...
we're almost done. We're in the home stretch.
I need to see a doctor, Harold Ramis.
Okay. We'll have you see a doctor tomorrow. Is tomorrow good for you? All right. We're going to figure this out, but we will see you next week with SNL back. There's a new episode with Adam Driver and Halsey. And until then, nerds out.
This has been a Non-Productive Media presentation. Executive producer, Frank Hablawi. This program and many others like it on the Non-Productive Network is distributed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives license. Please share it, but ask before trying to change it or sell it. For more information, visit non-productive.com.
Hey folks, this is Frank from the Non-Productive Network, wishing all of you a happy birthday 2020. That's not what anybody says. A happy new year from everyone here at NonPro. Yeah, that's it. In this new year, we need your help to make our network better than ever, just by answering a few questions. Go to non-productive.com/survey and tell us a little bit about what you want from our shows. And you can enter for a chance to win a fabulous thank you prize, and of course, get the opportunity to sound off about everything you think about our station. Once again, that's non-productive.com/survey, and thanks for all your support.